This is Claudia Shamba welcoming you to this 2013 edition of Ask a Leader. Today, it's my pleasure to have on the show, before you shoppers take your last commercial laps, two guests will take up some of the most central themes of this time of the year. First, we're going to hear from Sheikh Mustafa Umar of the Islamic Institute of Orange County. He's going to explore the religion of the three kings and the prophecy of theirs shared by Christians and Muslims about Jesus. Then, Daily Living, the Peace on Earth refrain in 2013 will be considered by Scotty Brewer, founder of Peace Now, not to be confused with Peace Now, the Israeli creation. Today, my first guest, Sheikh Mustafa Umar, will talk. He'll be the education director at the Islamic Institute of Orange County. And second half, as I said, Scotty Brewer. Stay tuned. We'll be back after really a short break. That was The Sounds of Blackness. Just a real treat. Oh, holy night. And oh, holy beginnings of some holidays coming here. Welcome back to the show. It all started not 2,000 years ago, but just a couple of months ago when I first met Sheikh Umar, when he was taping a national public radio interview at our station, and I asked about the themes around the emergence of the three kings, the Magi, and he graciously agreed to come back on this holiday for many to discuss this entire narrative from the Islamic perspective. Sheikh Mustafa Umar was born and raised in Orange County, California. He completed his bachelor's in information and computer science from UCI while studying Arabic and getting a taste of the various Islamic disciplines. He later studied at Nadwatul Ulama in Lucknow, India, and then on to Cairo, Egypt. After 2 years in the East, he moved to France for another 3 years and graduated in a degree in theology and Islamic law, taught completely in Arabic, from the European Institute of Islamic Sciences. He went on to serve the Muslim community in Southern California as an imam and activist for about 3 years. And after his post at the Islamic Society of Corona, Norco, he moved to the United Kingdom, wrote several books on Islam while completing an MA in Islamic Studies from the University of Gloucester. He currently serves, as I said earlier in the introduction of the whole show, he serves as the education director at the Islamic Institute of Orange County. That's right in Anaheim. We'll give you all the whereabouts here at the end of the piece. With his ability to fuse together traditional Islam education with the academic experience of both the Arab and Western worlds, along with his field for modern pop culture, he was our man to take up the legends, the narratives, the legacies, the prophecies. He joins me today in studio. A welcome to the show, Sheikh Umar.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that you are here. Let's begin, because there's a lot to cover, theology and perhaps in some ways history. Let's start with, what does the Quran say about the birth of Jesus, since Jesus is a prophet of Islam?
The Quran actually goes into the details of the history. In fact, it goes to not only the birth of Mary, but it begins actually even before the birth of Mary. So it talks about the stories intertwined in the Quran with Zechariah, with John and Jesus together in the story. So what happens is really it starts out talking about the mother of Mary. And the mother of Mary is a very important figure, Hannah, although she's not mentioned by name and in the Quran. But it talks about her and how she's actually having a child in the first place, who she wants to dedicate to the temple. And that's really where the story of Jesus really starts. And I think it's very important for people to realize that there's actually an entire chapter in the Quran named after Mary. It's called the Chapter of Mary.
And where does the Hannah name come from?
Hannah is, I think, historical or biblical. That's a name that we just came
across.
That's
key, historical or biblical. That's how to split that that hair, because it's a broad one. So
yeah, absolutely.
So, and is Hannah's name is in the Quran?
No, it's not mentioned in the Quran, but it says the mother of Mary.
Okay.
So she just mentioned as the mother of Mary in particular, and then it talks about how she, you know, she made this promise to God privately, and she said that, you know what, when I have this child, I want this child to be completely 100% dedicated to your cause. And, you know, at that time, you know, they were among, you know, the Jewish family and among the children of Israel and the descendants. So she wanted to dedicate this child to the temple so that, you know, the child could serve and grow up in the temple and, you know, be, you know, become a rabbi and become, you know, for the service of the temple. And what happened was, as soon as she gave birth, then she realized it's a female, it's not a male. And this is something that was very shocking, because at that time, only the males were supposed to be in the temple. So the Quran actually, you know, elaborates on this aspect of the story, which I think many, many people don't, you know, really focus on this aspect. It's definitely in the Quran. So when it talks about that, it says, so she was shocked and she says, you know, she talks to God and she says, "My Lord, you know, I had a female child and I promised you that I was going to dedicate this child to the temple. What do I do now? I mean, what am I supposed to do? You can't do that." And then they realize that, you know, the Quran actually says that the female is unlike the male, meaning there are certain things in females that they have which are far superior and better than males. So don't be disappointed and don't be upset that you had a female child. So this is a very important point when it comes to, you know, the concept of femininity and the concept of females in the Quran. So anyways, what happens then is, she actually ends up dedicating this child to the temple anyways. And Mary actually goes to the temple in Jerusalem, and she is under the care and under the tutelage of some of the senior rabbis over there. So what happened was, they were deciding who to take care of Mary. I mean, who's the one who's going to be in charge of her? Because it's a big honor. She's from a very important family, you know, family stretching all the way back to Moses and Aaron. So what happens is, Zechariah, who in the Islamic tradition is a prophet as well. So Zechariah, he actually gets the care of taking care of Mary. You know, he wins, basically they cast lots, and then he actually wins this competition.
Who are the they?
The other rabbis.
Okay.
Yeah, the other rabbis.
Okay.
All right. So the other rabbis were actually competing, and they said, "No, we want to take care of her. We want to take care of her." So Zechariah, he actually, you know, what they do is they threw their pens. It's like casting lots. What they would do is they would take their pens and they would throw them into a small stream of water, and to see which pen is the last one that remains and doesn't fly, you know, float away with the stream, that's going to determine who wins the challenge, basically.
Oh,
so
my.
They all threw their pens and he won the challenge.
Oh.
So he gets to take care of Mary.
Okay, take care of her.
Take care of her.
Because, backtrack, from what little I'm learning and understanding is that, first of all, it's important in the Islamic consideration, God is not a physical manifestation.
No, no,
and so there isn't going to be a son of God in this eventual prophetic emergence of Jesus.
Right,
so
right.
Zechariah and Mary then become there. There is no mention of Joseph. It's Zechariah then who is.
Yeah, it's Zechariah then taking care primarily of Mary.
Okay,
right.
Well, so that's a whole different kind of a narrative then, and from the Christian perspective of how Joseph steps up to the plate in Christianity. So,
right.
So then let's see some more differences here. So let's talk about the other prophecies associated with Jesus in Islam.
So the other prophecies, basically the Quran keeps on talking about once Jesus does come, and once he starts, you know, preaching.
Does come. How does he come then?
So let's start with that.
Yes.
Let's start with that. So now Mary is growing up in the temple. Under the care and under, you know...
In Jerusalem. Oh, right, okay.
Right, so she's growing up in Jerusalem, and she's growing up in the temple, and she's a very pious person, and she's very well respected, and, you know, she's living in those quarters over there. And now, Zechariah notices that Mary starts performing certain miracles as well. So that one of the miracles that was performed by her was that she was getting fruits which were out of season.
Wow.
So Zechariah would come inside her room, and he says, you know, where did you get all these fruits from?
Are they specific about them?
It doesn't mention the types of
just
fruits.
Just out of season.
It just says fruits out of season.
But they're local.
They're local, exactly. They're local, because where else would she get them from?
Well,
the temple?
Well, they are miraculously arriving. It could be.
Exactly.
It could be from mangoes from another planet.
Exactly, okay. Exactly. So he notices this, and he says, you know, well, where did you get this from? And she says, this is something my Lord has given me. This is a special gift from my Lord. So this is miraculous. You know, so the story goes on, and then it transitions. It takes a tangent, and it starts talking about
her own fruits.
Not only her fruits, but it takes a tangent. it takes a tangent, and then it says, and then Zechariah, he had been waiting for a son. He had really wanted a child, but he did not have a child.
So, and is there an explanation for that?
The explanation historically is that the children of Israel or the rabbis at that time were becoming corrupt. And this is something confirmed in Christianity as well. That's it. You know,
it's historical, so it's confirmed everywhere.
Yeah, it's historical, right?
Okay.
So a lot of the rabbis in the temple were becoming corrupt, and Zechariah was kind of fighting with them. You know, a lot of disputes going on and everything. So he wanted to leave somebody for them after, because he was getting old and he's going to pass away soon. So he wants to leave somebody who's strong, somebody who's from a noble lineage, so that he can guide these people back.
His biological clock is ticking faster.
Exactly. And his wife is very old now. She's barren. She really can't have any children. And he didn't have any children yet. So now he gets this idea after seeing Mary having these fruits out of season. So how did you do this? Well, God can do whatever he wants. Then he gets this idea. You know what? I never prayed for a child. I never asked God for anything like this. So now he goes and he starts praying and praying for a child, and I would like to have a child who can guide these people after me, because I'm going to be passing away soon.
But he didn't get his wires crossed. His barren wife, I mean, he's just saying a child. He doesn't say who is the recipient of of this conception.
Right, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
What happens?
So then he has John. He has Yahya. So this prayer of his is answered, and there's a miracle for him as well. And that's John, generally referred to as John the Baptist.
Okay.
So now we have John coming into the scene, right? So now he's going to be someone who's going to be a very important figure in terms of working alongside with Jesus, although Jesus is not here in the picture yet, right? So now what happens is, now another miracle that's performed by Mary is that the angels come and they visit Mary. And they say, Mary, you're going to have a child. And Mary is shocked. And she says, you know what? You know, how could I have a child, but, you know, no one has touched me? She understands the miracles of getting fruit out of season.
Right, that part she can live with.
She understands how Zechariah can have a child, even though his wife is already old and barren, but she still delivered a child. But having now a child without any male intervention is a shocking thing for her. So she couldn't believe it. And she says, how can that be? You know, I'm not impure. I've never had a relationship with anyone. I'm not married or anything like that. I'm still quite young. So what?
Powerful yet pious.
Exactly.
So this doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. So she's shocked. And the angel said, "If for God, he can do anything. He just says, happen, and it'll happen." Right. So then she gets this word, she gets this news that she is going to be having a child. So then this is a very important part, actually. So then it says, the Quran says, and the angel blew a spirit from God into her.
That's the physical connection.
That's the physical
all important one. Okay.
Exactly. So now spirit meaning the life spirit. So now she's pregnant without any, you know, there's no father of the child. So now she's pregnant. So now what does she do? You know, this is a huge problem because, like I mentioned, the rabbis were becoming a little bit corrupt at that time. You know, a lot of people were not believing in Zechariah as a prophet.
A little bit. But, I mean, I don't know if you can be a little bit corrupt. You either are or you aren't.
You either are or you aren't. I mean, it was pretty bad. I mean, we're going to see how, you know, Jesus is. Yeah, it's bad. It's pretty bad.
Okay.
Jesus, upturning the money changer tables and all that. So it's pretty bad. So what happens is she knows what's going to happen, right? She knows that people are going to start talking about her and accusing her of adultery or accusing her of this or that, because they're not going to accept her as being, because this is a miracle, which means you're someone special. And when you have animosity towards someone, you become envious of them. You wish that all the benefit comes to you. So like those same rabbis who wanted to take care of her and they lost the challenge of throwing their pens in the river, they're going to be jealous, right? So now she realizes this is going to be a major problem. So she runs away from Jerusalem and she goes into hiding.
So that's another flight theme that's pervasive throughout.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
So she goes into hiding and she's trying to conceal her pregnancy so that no one can, you know, find out the details of what's going on. She doesn't know what to do. And she's thinking, when I come back, what's going to happen? So now she's all by herself. There's nobody there, right? So in the Quranic part of the story, she's now about to give birth. And it's time to give birth. And she's feeling, you know, the pangs of childbirth. And there's no one there to help her. And she's just, you know, in pain, and it's a very difficult situation for her. And then she receives a revelation from God. And God says, look down, look right across, you know, where you're standing. There's a stream of water there, which has some pure water. So get some water, and, you know, this will help rejuvenate you. And then look at where you're, she was sitting next to a palm tree. She says, this palm tree that you're leaning on, just shake the palm tree a little bit, and these dates will start coming down. And this will be a miracle for you, so you'll get food and you'll get water. And which is really interesting, because actually when it comes to pregnancy today, many medical you know, professionals, what they say is that a woman actually needs to stay hydrated, she needs to have water, and she needs something which has a little bit of sugar to give her energy, something which has a lot of calories, which will, you know, give her enough, but she shouldn't be eating full meals. So this is exactly actually what Muslims, and in fact, a lot of even non-Muslims doctors, they recommend you drink some water, chew some ice chips, and you go ahead and you eat dates, and it gives you strength so that you can go through this childbirth process. So she got exactly that during this time.
My goodness. Well, for those that you have just joined us, you're listening to Ask a Leader here on Radio KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Streaming live all over in the OB centers and places of worship all over the world on the web, kuci.org. My distinguished guest this morning is Sheikh Mustafa Umar of the Islamic Institute of Orange County, and he's giving us the perspective, the Islamic perspective of the many prophecies of both the advent of Mary and of Jesus now. So we're now along now, we're in the birthing process where Mary's given the divine message of how to reinvigorate herself and prepare for the delivery of this. And is the word Messiah in the Quran?
Yes, actually,
that's the word.
Yes, it is.
In fact, what book is this in? And yes,
this is all over the Quran.
Okay,
it's everywhere. And in fact, the word is al-Masih.
Okay,
so Masih from Messiah, and in fact, the root of the word, if you look at it, because you know it's from Semitic languages.
Yes.
So the root of the word Masaha means to wipe, actually. And it's something which is all Arabs use. They use this, you know, this root. So to wipe, basically what the traditional connotation was to anoint somebody. When they would anoint somebody in order to bless them, like a king or a pillar or whatever it was, they would take some oil and they would, you know, wipe this on their head. And this is a way of, you know, blessing him. So Al-Masih basically means that this is someone who's going to be blessed, someone who's going to be very near, you know, close to God, and someone who holds a very important special status.
And throughout. And will there be special celebrations, prayers this particular calendar day today and tomorrow in the Islamic community?
No, definitely not. Because one, we don't know the exact date in terms of what happened. So there's, I mean, even the Christians, for example, in the Eastern Orthodox tradition, they celebrate Christmas on January 6th.
Right.
So when we don't know the actual date, it's not something that we celebrate per se.
And that 6 has to do the Magi too.
Right.
So and
right.
That's speaking of them. So
right.
So wow.
Right.
So she then delivers anointed,
yes,
the blessed,
yes,
Messiah, and then where does the Quran go from there? Jesus is already a prophet because he's anointed prior to conception.
Mm-hmm. He's the one who was prophesied. He was the one that, you know, the Jews were told, or the children of Israel were told, that, you know, you're going to be having somebody coming who's going to be very special, meaning anointed. He's going to be the special prophesied one who's going to be guiding you. Like, there's different prophecies of different prophets throughout time. So now what happens is, so Mary comes, she delivers the child, and now she comes back to the temple. Now this is where the real test comes.
Okay.
Right? So are they going to accept him, or are they going to, you know, say that no, you know, this is, you know, something else going on? So she comes back, and she's instructed by God to not speak. So she's
why?
Because now a miracle is about to be performed.
So it's time for calm silence.
It's time for calm silence because her main worry was, what in the world am I going to tell the people? They're not going to believe me when I tell them that this is a miracle. So no matter, I mean, no matter what kind of words, I can't be so eloquent to explain myself or try and convince them.
There's disbelief. There's resentment. There's disgust. There's all kinds of things. So she's got a,
Exactly. So
it's a
very, very difficult scenario. So what happens now is she comes back and she's told to remain quiet and just gesture at the child when anyone asks something. So this is very shocked. She doesn't know what's going to happen, right? This is a second time where, you know, she kind of gets a hint about what's going to happen, but she's not sure. So she goes, and now all of a sudden the people of the city and some of the rabbis who had enmity towards her and towards Zechariah, they know her, and they start accusing her of adultery. And they say, what were you doing? You know, you're
from a whisper campaign.
Exactly, exactly. And they start saying, you know, you're from such a noble family. You're from the family of Aaron. You know, you're from the family of Moses. And you do something like this. You go and you sleep around with someone, I mean, secretly, and you've been missing for such a long time. I mean, how could you do something like this?
But don't they know about those fruits that she was somehow coming upon? That didn't impress anything upon them?
They do. But you see, the thing is, they may see some signs, but if the heart is hard,
okay,
the person is going to reject those signs.
There's the current application.
Okay. Right. It's like Pharaoh rejecting Moses, turning the staff into a snake. I mean, that's as clear as you can get. But if you don't want to believe, you will reject everything.
Okay. So the enmity of these rabbis, as she's now dealing with them.
Right.
So let's take it back to that point.
Right.
Sorry.
So now this is where the first miracle of Jesus is manifested. So they start accusing her and accusing her publicly, and she's not speaking, and she's not saying anything. And then they start, you know, you can imagine what they were saying. I mean, it doesn't say the details of what
I
they said.
You can
imagine, you know, I mean, you know, what's wrong with you? What, you can't speak? What do you have to say for yourself? Come on, you can't even answer? At least try and defend yourself. At least give us some excuse. And she's instructed to not speak at all. So what she does is she gestures towards the child, and they start, you know, looking and saying, what, you want us to ask the child?
So the verb in the Quran, the Arabic word for gesturing, so is it a kind of a particular expression?
Yeah, I believe it's like ashara, which means that ishara is like a type of gesture.
Okay.
So she makes a kind of
it's a special gesture?
No, it's a general.
You could do that any day.
You could do that
we
any day.
We could be doing it in our conversation in the
absolutely.
Studio.
Yeah,
okay.
It's any type of general gesture.
So she's gesturing
to she's gesturing,
this
you know,
infant.
To this infant who's just a baby. And then they're probably, you know, it doesn't say what they said, but you can imagine that they're probably like, are you joking? You want us to talk to the child? I mean, what kind of joke is this? And then that's when his miracle was manifested. So he started speaking. So the child
in Aramaic?
It doesn't say which language, but most probably Aramaic or Hebrew, whichever one of the languages, you know, they were understanding. And he starts speaking now. And this is a manifest miracle in front of everyone. And what he says is even more important.
Yes.
You know,
what does he say?
So what he says is, I am a messenger from God. I am a messenger from God sent here for your guidance. And I'm going to be teaching you again what's really in the Torah. And I'm a confirmation. And here's where the prophecy comes. I'm a confirmation of what you already know in your own books. Therefore, you should be accepting this. And this is where, you know, people are just shocked to their core. You know, so now they witness the first miracle of Jesus, and this is something that, you know, they just can't fathom. But the people who have enmity, they're going to have enmity in their hearts. And they're going to say, you know what, this is some kind of magic. So what they did was, they called him a magician. They said, this is some kind of magic that you guys are playing. And, you know, we don't know how to explain it.
Black magic.
Black magic.
Implied.
This is some kind of black magic that's going on. And usually, you know, black magic is performed by, I mean, they had black magicians, but it's performed by like the
diabolical,
the wicked people of the society, you know, the worst people in that community. And now they're accusing her not only of adultery, they're accusing them, this family, of practicing black magic, which is a very serious accusation. So this is the first miracle of Jesus that was performed, and this is where the story really begins in the Quran about Jesus.
How does this enmity ever get reversed, or does it? Or this whole crowd is relegated to just a bad crowd, and that's the end of that? They never redeem themselves in the Quran?
They don't redeem themselves, except a small group of them who become the disciples. So the disciples of Jesus was the small group from among these people who actually followed Jesus and believed in him and stuck with his teachings.
And those are the ones that show up.
Those are the ones that come later.
In the New Testament.
Exactly.
All of, you said six of them?
No, 12.
All 12. Okay.
All 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so, and so do the Magi. I know they only come up, the three kings, or first referred to as the Magi, mm-hmm. in the book, the Gospel of Matthew. It's the only book that refers to them.
Right.
So is that phenomenon, that's what we were first talking about. I was wondering, like, well, first of all, do they appear anywhere in the Quran?
Right. So those ones who are visiting, they don't directly appear in the Quran. But instead, what happens is, what you find is when Jesus is talking about, this is what you already had in your books, right?
Yes.
This is a prophecy that you already know about, and you knew that I was coming, and you can figure out that I am a true messenger of God. This is something which confirms the fact that these people are coming from out of town, and they're also saying, look, we're familiar with this prophecy from another place as well. So we also believe. So this is like another historical confirmation on the side of what Jesus was saying in the beginning, you know, since he came.
Well, it's not a historical confirmation, and from by some people's estimations, it's because there's nothing pinning down. It's all reference to Matthew's the only reference point,
right?
And
right.
And he doesn't mention more than there isn't a specific number of them, and they're going through the whole theme of arriving, and Herod is very on alert about who's this Messiah coming, mm-hmm. and they're trying to sort of stay off the radar with him and protect the Messiah that they're going to be visiting shortly.
Mm-hmm.
So that I understand that Matthew, the point for Matthew in his gospel is to bring about a successor to the King David, King of the Jews,
mm-hmm.
that there needs to be, and so this is the vehicle for him in Christianity to bring this Messiah into civilization. So there, but Matthew is not a prophet in the Quran.
No,
he's not.
No,
okay.
No.
So are there? Let's see. There's more prophecies here. Does the Quran bring up then how Herod at all, and where Jesus had to be hidden? Just as the Jews had to flee to Egypt, Jesus had to lay low too when Herod was going to try to find out where this Messiah was and eliminate any of these those challenging his supremacy in that civilization at that time.
Right. Yeah, when it comes to these historical details in terms of what was going on in Jerusalem, the fact that, you know, the Romans were colonizing that area at the time, the Quran doesn't mention these historical details, because what it generally does is it just focuses on the moral lessons which people will get from the story, and it kind of assumes that, you know, the Jews and the Christians who were living there and they're familiar with the narrative already, they can already give some context from the history that they know. So it doesn't give any dates. It doesn't give too many names of any particular people. And that's just the way the Quran is across the board when it comes to...
It's not topical.
It's not topical.
It's allegories to explain human nature and how to be pure.
Right. I mean, not so much allegories in the metaphorical sense, but it's considered historical. But it doesn't give you all the details. So when somebody comes and says, well, did it happen on this date? Or was it around this century? Or was it around this time? Say, you know what? If that's what history proves, then yeah, that's probably it. But if it's not, then you know what? That's not an issue for us, because the point was not for you to situate it within a particular time. The point was to get the lessons from what actually happened. That's what's the key importance for people.
And that's the importance of, in our everyday lives, how it matters.
Exactly, exactly.
So I think that is interesting. I heard on public radio this week, a matter of how a number of Latino Americans, originally Roman Catholic, have been presented with Islam and find it very resonating with them.
Mm-hmm.
Culturally, they're Roman Catholic, but theologically, more and more are becoming, are converting to Islam.
Yes,
that takeaway message then is very important. And why it matters today is about your heart, opening up to where superior qualities in human nature are correctly acknowledged, and the reactions are appropriate to that,
right.
That kind of a thing. And the enmity condemns you to a deprived sort of human condition.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought this up because...
No, you did.
sorry. The thing about the Latinos coming into Islam, one of the main reasons or one of the main things is they start with the story of Jesus and the story of Mary because they're coming from a Roman Catholic background. And one of the things when they read the story, they compare and contrast. And when they actually go into the contrast and they look at some of the differences, one of the main differences for them, which kind of resonates with them, is this idea that Jesus is more of a servant of God rather than a God himself or a son of God. And I think this you know, difference in the narrative makes a world of difference in terms of the way that they view it theologically. No.
Oh, my word. So I just want to mention that as we're, I think we're going to be wrapping, I don't see the next calling in coming up yet. My guest is Sheikh Mustafa Umar of the Islamic Institute of Orange County. And I want for people to know where the center is located. It's at 1220 North State College Boulevard in Anaheim. And there is a number, area code 714-533-6271. It's, I think office hours are roughly 10 to 5:30.
Yeah.
So to get someone live there. And there is on the website IIOC.com a schedule of regularly programmed events, instructions for individuals, for family members. And there are registration is necessary for some of the events, and you can find out that by looking at the calendar, waving your cursor over any particular day of the week. And I imagine that the invitations are open to everyone.
Absolutely.
But that they must recognize the appropriate physical location for where any guest is allowed to congregate.
Right.
That's my importance. So we can...
Right. And usually when they stop by, I mean, if they stop by at almost any time where we're open, and we're open most of the day, someone can direct them in terms of what to do or what... So people should not shy away. Whenever they want to just stop by, they could just drive by and come in and just ask someone, hey, you know, I'm just here as a visitor. Can you, you know, just guide me in terms of what I need to do?
So and in terms of the how... This date is very important to Christians. Then, at any Islamic place of worship, there won't be any acknowledgement for it. So if somebody wanted to be closer to a Christian tradition on this date doesn't exist in Islam. So there isn't any commemoration about the Messiah.
That's correct.
By design.
Yeah, by design. In fact, there's no commemoration about any of the prophets' births. In particular. And in fact, even if we had the day, it's not something that we would, because then the question is, do we start by celebrating the birth, or do we start by celebrating when they received the revelation, or do we start by celebrating, you know, when some important event happened to them, or they've manifested their first miracle? So for Muslims, because we pray five times a day, right, we do this literally on a daily basis. So when we're reciting the Quran in our prayers, we're reciting the verses of the Quran which talk about Jesus almost on a daily basis.
And what can we hear? First in Arabic, some reference to Jesus in Arabic, if you will be so kind.
Okay.
And what does that reference absolutely capture in English translation?
Okay, I'm going to...
Okay,
I'll give
you a moment to think about that.
You have to
that.
Give me a moment to
so
think about
I've,
that.
So I just want to remind people that the website to be a guest and find out more activities at the Islamic Institute of Orange County. It's IIOC.com. It's in Anaheim, and there will be some courses. Let's see, tomorrow there will, and it's Mondays and Wednesdays, there's a course taught at 5:30, and that includes tomorrow, folks. Thursdays will be, it's a women's tafsir class, and that can be explained when you call in the center. Friday night, it's family night, 8 p.m. It's always, that is the holiday of the day of rest every week in Islam. And so you can find out all of those. And while he's continuing to look up a few notes, I just wanted to mention that Sheikh Umar will be teaching in the winter quarter Islamic Law 3, Principles of Interpretation. And that will be on Tuesday nights, January 14th through April 1st. So there are a number of ways for people to be guests, and I imagine that when you call in, you can call ahead, I recommend, so that you'd know the appropriate modest dress to wear at the place. And is it important for a guest, for women to cover their hair if they are not observant Muslims?
Just to visit the center, no. But if they want to enter into the prayer area, then yes. But we actually have the head cover. So when they want to come in, they can just put it on to walk inside.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So people know that.
Yeah.
Well, can you give us an invocation of it? And the word is the Messiah in Arabic. Not Jesus is not the word used in the Quran?
Both.
Okay. Yeah. So I'd like to hear it. And if it's, is it going to be in a kind of a chant?
It's
going to
be, yeah, it's going to be recited.
Please do. This is so cool.
Okay.
I mean, so good.
All right. فَلَمَّا أَحَسَّ عِيسَى مِنْهُمُ الْكُفْرَ قَالَ مَنْ أَنْصَارِي إِلَى اللَّهِ قَالَ الْحَوَارِيُّونَ نَحْنُ أَنْصَارُ اللَّهِ آمَنَّا بِاللَّهِ وَاشْهَدْ بِأَنَّا مُسْلِمُونَ رَبَّنَا آمَنَّا بِمَا أَنْزَلْتَ وَاتَّبَعْنَا الرَّسُولَ فَاكْتُبْنَا مَعَ الشَّاهِدِينَ.
This is Sheikh Umar incanting the part of the Quran that invokes the Messiah, named Jesus in name. And so what does that mean?
So there's actually 88 verses, which I'm counting, which talk about Jesus. So I just recited two for you.
Two, okay.
So the ones that I picked one at random here. So this is a story about the disciples when they were being recruited, basically. So it says, but when Jesus perceived unbelief on their part, on the part of these people, he said, who will be my helpers in Allah's way, in God's way? And the disciples, they said, we are the helpers of God. We believe in God and we bear witness that we are submitting to him. And then they said, O our Lord, we believe in what you have revealed and we follow the prophet. So write us down with those who bear witness.
I'm going to have to ask, who are we?
The disciples are speaking.
Those are the disciples.
So it quotes the disciples now, after them being recruited and them believing. Now this is a statement coming from their mouths, that yes, we believe in you, God, and we are following this prophet. We are following Jesus, and we are dedicated, and we are committed to him.
Okay, that was beautiful. Yes. That's the first, and so there are 86 other verses that have take it in some other directions.
Yes, all the rest of the story, kind of what we were talking about, and all other things about Jesus and about, you know. In fact, there's actually more verses that talk about him, but not necessarily about his story. So just 88 regarding the story, and the other verses which talk about the doctrine of Jesus and what he preached and how, you know, how we should view it and all of these things.
And that's where a converting Roman Catholic, they're hearing that message throughout the Quran, and they're ready to accept and adopt and convert with that general thread there.
Well, right. And when people read the Quran, one of the first things I recommend, rather than just starting from the beginning, especially if they're Christian or if they want to know about Jesus, I recommend starting with a chapter on Mary, which actually I believe is chapter, I think, 19. So just flipping to that chapter and just starting is a very good place to start. Let me check. Yeah, it is chapter 19. Yeah.
And that reference, is that to the fruit and the miracles? Or
It's to the fruit and the miracles, but then it goes on to the life of Jesus and talks about Jesus in Islam in quite a lot of detail.
Yeah. Well, are you invited to come to any Christian places of worship to speak this week?
This week, no. I've not been invited. But I've,
previously to this week?
Previously, I have, yes.
And you've talked about the Messiah?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
What did you say?
I gave them the story of Jesus.
The same story.
The same story. With a little bit less detail, but a little bit more about his life and, you know, what happened afterwards.
And what do their faces look like?
Shocked. To be honest, they're shocked. They're shocked that we even believe in Jesus in the first place. So they're many of the congregations, they just, many people, you know, many Americans, when they say, you know, but you're Muslim, so how you don't believe in Jesus?
They forgot the dateline, though.
Yeah.
I mean, so, and Muhammad took all that out.
Right.
And he wrote that. He got that message from somewhere,
mm-hmm.
the divine message. So,
mm-hmm.
so they, for the, but the, those Christians forgot about the, his mm-hmm. place in history and when, him post-dating
right.
Jesus Christ. So,
right.
Wow.
Right.
A phenomenal message. Well, I really appreciate your coming all the way from your center and from your residence today. And mm-hmm. so what will you be, what will your work day consist of today and tomorrow?
Today I'm actually researching for our upcoming classes. So I'm researching on the principles of
the Islamic law.
Of Islamic law, and also writing some notes for Arabic and preparing for my Friday sermon as well.
And your students are going to be students that are already enrolled at the Islamic Center? And will they be adults from beyond the center who want to, like when you were in this position in years past,
mm-hmm.
where they're beginning to perhaps convert, or they're moving from a secular Islamic life into a more spiritual, a more observant life? And so does that is that a sort of the, or who do you expect to be in your Islamic law course?
We expect everybody. So we even have non-Muslims attending as well. And in fact, we broadcast a live stream now.
Okay. So you want to tell us where that's, is that on the web?
It's on the website, yeah.
IIOC.com,
yeah. So we're live streaming. And in fact, you know, just last quarter, we have students now from all around the world, actually. We have students in South Africa.
It's a virtual class.
It's a virtual class as well, yeah. So we have literally from Malaysia to South Africa to UK to all over the place.
And they can get in touch with each other, I guess.
Absolutely. And they can get into the live stream. And we're actually expanding to Spanish now. So we're going to be looking at Latin America because there's a lot of Muslims in Latin America, in Chile and Argentina and all of these places. And also people who would like to learn more. So we're starting those as well.
Okay. Well, that is really, it's really remarkable to get this really deep perspective. And I know this isn't deep enough. There's much more to say about this. So, I don't know. I'm going to put on you as we close, Sheikh Umar, if there is a kind of a bridge message to anyone streaming anywhere, listening today, or may listen to the podcast later, a message for today.
Right. I think the message is that many people have different stories about Jesus, and there are similarities which can bring a lot of commonalities and break down a lot of barriers and perhaps a lot of misconceptions between different groups of people. But then there are also differences. And the differences can actually lead to theological differences. It can lead to clearing up certain other misconceptions that people may have about religion or about Jesus or about God or about religion in general. So I think it's very important for those people who are trying to get something of value and of substance to look at alternative stories, like the alternative story that's offered in the Quran, and then to decide for themselves.
Thank you so much. That was just exceptional. And exceptional I use advisedly, because it's otherwise overused. So,
right.
Sheikh Umar, thank you so much for being on Ask a Leader today. Sheikh Mustafa Umar,
thank you.
From the Islamic Center in Orange County. We'll be right back after a break, and we'll talk, I hope, with Scotty Brewer with PeaceNow.com. Thanks for staying with us. Thank you, everybody, for staying with us. We're going to get a hold of Mr. Scotty Brewer here in just a bit. We'll play a little bit of music while we're waiting his call in. And I hope you enjoy it. This is we just heard the Irish version of O Come All Ye Faithful in Gaelic. And so the next is a beautiful rendering. There's some French 13th, 14th century Christmas selection. So stay with us while we play that. It's going to be a real joy. Thank you for staying with us. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for staying with us. My next guest here on Ask a Leader is Scotty Brewer, an entrepreneur, author, and book publisher, and the founder of Peace Now, a nonprofit organization that he's created to enlist 1 billion peace ambassadors who want world peace dedicated and mobilizing from the local level on up. Scotty will talk today about his belief in everyone's ability to live in this world together. Scotty served in the U.S. Marine Corps and received his Bachelor's of Science in Forest Management at Purdue University. And after a career in forestry, he became an entrepreneur in several ventures. He is the author of The Best 10 Years of Your Life, But Let's Plan on 20. He is a volunteer currently still for the Veterans Administration Chaplain Services in Indianapolis, and he does come to us today from Indianapolis as we focus on his new organization, PeaceNow.com. Welcome to Ask a Leader, Scotty Brewer.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you on such a beautiful morning.
It is. It's a beautiful morning here as well. Well, the classic question for you, Scotty, how did you take up this latest in this nonprofit venture as you distinguish yourself, PeaceNow.com, from it's also there's a lot of other organizations with very similar charters?
Well, the way I originated the idea, or the way it was originated within me, came when I was writing a Memorial Day article that supported our veterans last May. And as I wrote the article, I was saying the best way to honor our fallen and those that have served was that they don't have to have their children do the same kind of thing. And as I thought of it, I was like, as I wrote the article, I was like, we should have peace now. And our vision for our future should be peace now. And then the next morning when I woke up, I said, why the heck don't we have peace now? Everybody wants it. So what's stopping us? And I thought about our government and its efforts to make peace, and I'm like, you know, we're involved with conflicts everywhere. And we have a defense budget that's 2.5 times what the rest of the world is combined. And then I said, well, religion, so well, that's half the reason we're fighting. And then I'm like, you know, when I turn on the TV, all I see is stories of violence. And we need a new focus on peace now. So that morning, I bought the website domain and then just started talking to people. And they said, wow, what's different about what you're wanting to do? And I said, the Internet, for the first time in history, there are 2.5 billion people that are connected right together via their keyboards. So why not get an online petition for a billion citizens of the world that say, we want peace now, and we want peace departments in every government. We're going to have war departments and health departments and education departments. The peace should be represented at every big meeting where the powerful are setting to discuss our future. So that's the difference, is that we want peace now, and we think it's possible because we are one worldwide community that is finally joined together with a means that we can reach around borders, around religion, around politics, and just join one hand and say peace now.
So there was the peace commemoration day on September 21st of this year, and in each year there's an additional international day of peace that you plan for. And in the intervening times, tell us about some of the ideas and the information that you'd like to create, like the peace mobs, peace fests. What sorts of tangible activities are you giving people a chance to sort of congregate and express themselves around this theme?
Well, right now the biggest thing that we're working on, and it's out beyond it's next November. As we talk to people around the world and see that the our belief that peace now is a reality and that we will obtain it because it's just a matter of getting the word out, then how do you change from the economics of war? That there's a lot of jobs around conflict. And So we're having a peace symposium next November in Los Angeles. That it's the 7th through the 9th, and they can see some preliminary information up on the website now. But it's called Peace as an Economic Engine, Enabling and Sustaining Peace Through Jobs and Profit. And our idea is that there's so much more to be gained, both economically and spiritually and humanitarianly, through peace. For example, 1.2 billion people still don't have electricity in the world, which means they don't have water pumps and they don't have electricity. What if we said we were going to go ahead and electrify the world? Well, that's electric wire. That's a different type of composite telephone poles. That's rectifiers. That's dams and power plants. Those are jobs that can build us up. And once we start using our creativity to solve the world's problems, and that includes global temperature change and pandemics and all of the global things, because there's not a problem that just affects one of us. We are all one today, and we need to look at solutions together, and all solutions are better enabled through peace.
So how do you get from the acknowledgement of a conversion away from, you're saying, like the war machine to a peaceful infrastructure, how do you get from peace ambassador signing to moving this infrastructure along, Scotty Brewer?
Well, the first thing is that I realize that I don't have all the answers. That I've just, the only reason that I'm here is that I have a big voice and I'm fearless. The truly wonderful solutions will come from you and other peace ambassadors if they join us. So, but the idea of the symposium is to get together economists, industrialists that share vision that we are one together and start looking for those solutions. But what I trust and I believe with all my being is that maybe the 50,000 person that says they want to be a peace ambassador, or the 2 million or the 500 million, or a combination of all of those people aligning their hearts and their minds and their vision together, the solutions for how we move forward and how we solve problems will be created, because for the first time we recognize that we are more sustainable. We are all one, and I'm all about creativity. I think when I get up in the morning, I think it's a blessed day if I get to be creative. And all of us get to be creative toward solving this problem that we have with conflict. So I don't have all the answers, but I'll put up some, I'll voice the opportunity to say, stand up and join us and offer your solution, and we'll embrace it.
And so there's a format for people to bring to the peacenow.com domain. How does this get some kind of traction and follow through? Help me with that.
Well, the first thing is you can go to our website, peacenow.com, and just sign the petition and go away. But you're also, at that same time you sign the petition, you're asked, do you want to be a peace ambassador? And as the peace ambassador, you can create your own page that allows you to share ideas and to blog with one another, to follow, to like us on Twitter, and then talk to us through Facebook. And then we also, you can volunteer. And then if you want to have a Rwanda for peace, or a Students of Cairo University for peace, and start forming and organizing and sharing.
Are they coming through? You're hearing
from
them? Okay, so it's really, because that's what I'm saying. It's just the situation just gets bleaker by the hour when we're watching Syria, South Sudan, Republic of Central African Empire, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, South China Sea, all over, on and on and on. So that the forum is opening up, and you're seeing some momentum gaining here.
Right.
Okay,
well,
good.
Yeah, we've only been up about 60 days, and we've got about going on 30,000 signatures and from 45 countries.
Okay, well, I'm sorry we were having to shorten this interview to such an extent. This was Scotty Brewer. He's the founder of PeaceNow.com. I don't want people to confuse it with the Israeli organization Peace Now that has been in existence for a couple of decades, if not longer. So I want to thank you, Scotty Brewer, for being on the show today.
Thank you.
And happy holidays to you.
Have blessings and peace now during your holidays.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye. I don't have any announcements. I just want to wish all of you some very happy holidays, a fine time with your loved ones, whether you are together or far apart. Let them know how much they mean to you. You mean a lot to me, listeners. Thank you for listening to my show.
And for this Christmas, I hope you have fun.